Greetings and good morning. About 4 years ago, I was asked by a stranger, what is orb? Have any of you ever been asked that? Is it kind of hard for you sometimes to answer, to know how to answer? I was at a Jets game, the one and only time I've ever been to a professional sporting event. One of the high school students at the time had scored some tickets from his father. A business associate in the city had given him. These were fine tickets, somewhere near the part of the field that's good. Okay, you know how much I know about football. But there I was with this young man, and he was very enthusiastic about the Jets, as he was about Orb. And so he had a sign in his hands that said, "Go Orb." And he was holding it in his lap, and at one point, the Jets scored a touchdown. Jets fans are very enthusiastic. And so the cheer went up, and everyone stood, and this friend of mine held his sign up that said, "Go Orb," and people were cheering. And then this fellow behind us, with a very loud voice, he said, "Orb," that's how he pronounced orb, "Orb, what the is orb?" Now, there was a word there, which I won't repeat, and I felt terribly embarrassed, and I wondered how my friend would answer him, and I wonder if you would agree that there is a one-word answer, and if you don't agree, let me tell you, the one-word answer for what this is that Orb is a church. Words are very valuable and effective tools at shaping self-understanding. I think it matters a lot how this group here in this theater understands itself. And because I believe that, I am unwilling to let go of certain very important words for groups like ours, because I want more than anything for this group to understand itself in the right way so that knowing what it is, it will live in the world in the right way. So to that end, starting today and for 4 Sundays, we are going to be energized in an exercise of reclaiming words. Reclaim simply means to go and get something that used to mean one thing and then recover that meaning, to rescue it from misunderstanding. Let me show you what words we're going to look at. This morning, my hope for us together is very simply to understand better what the word church really means. Not what it's come to mean or what a Jets fan in the middle of a game might think it means, but rather what that word really meant originally. That's what we're going to do this week. Now, that word church is one of many that have been misunderstood through time that are connected, and so we're not going to try to cover it all today. But next week, we're going to look at this word member. Another word that you may have heard in connection with church that I think is gravely misunderstood and deserves to be recovered. And of course, church and member, well, they bring up other words. One that I think is crucial for us is the word mission. Another word that through time has been misunderstood and the meaning of it has been changed. And then lastly, the fourth one we're going to cover together is the word witness. I bet for each of you, as for me and for most folks, these words evoke certain responses emotionally that are connected with ideas about what they are. This one especially, witness. Today we're going to do church. And don't you just love the way that looks? Do you or not? Those of you who are listening on the internet, you know, you're not here today because you're running a marathon. By the way, these are recorded and put on the internet, so I'm just going to rub it in. You don't know what you're missing. All right. Church. What do you think of when you hear that word? I don't want you to say it, but what comes to mind? I conducted this exercise just to see what the dictionary would say. And that's a scan of a dictionary that I have in my office. It's a normal-sized dictionary like this. It's about this thick. It's unabridged. So I opened it to see like that, okay? And this is what you see when you get to the definition of in the dictionary of church. The first entry, and it's a long entry. There are many things that it says. The first entry for the word church is as follows. An edifice consecrated for public worship, especially one for Christian worship. Edifice. I looked that one up in the dictionary too. That is an imposing, impressive building. That's usually either something like a temple or a church or some very official civic or public structure that has a certain menacing quality to it in perhaps a holy way. Consecrated means set aside, set apart. And for Christian worship, that's the activity of a group of people who've gathered in that particular building for something to do with the praise of their God. If we had to come back to our book and say what most people think of when they think of church, we would come up with something like this. In the minds of most folks, the church is a building. Do you think that's true? This is one of the reasons I think when folks ask what is orb, it's hard to say a church because, well, we meet in a movie theater. The question is whether this is accurate or not. Now, at the start, you'll understand that I don't believe it is. I think that the identification of church with a building is a very, very grave misunderstanding. It reduces something that is very different from a building into something that's just static and ordinary and stays in one place. The church and a building, when those two things are identified, there are many, many misunderstandings that come along with it that change what we ought to be about in this place. Now, I'm not going to cover all of those this morning, but what I want to do with you is very simply, I want to look at three of those misunderstandings that come with identifying church with an edifice consecrated for Christian worship. All right, the first one. The first misunderstanding, I think, becomes plain when we consider the word in the New Testament, which is translated with the English word church. Every time you come across that word in the New Testament, church, and it's there quite a bit, every time you read that, you're reading a translation of a Greek word that looks like that. That's ekklesia. And the word is composed of a prefix, ek, and then a verb, kaleo. And that verb means call, and that little prefix means out. And so this word together, ekklesia, means called out. Another way of saying it would be summoned forth. Now, this word, ekklesia, in the New Testament, every single time it's written, out of all of the times it's used, whether it's in an epistle or in one of the Gospels, it never once, ever, is used in reference to a building. Not once. It's not sometimes used of a building. Never, ever is ekklesia the word that designates a physical structure made of brick and mortar. Not once. How many times does ekklesia refer to a building in the New Testament? Never. Are you getting me? I'm stressing this because two things. First, it's a dreadful misunderstanding. And second, it's almost automatic for us people these days, when we hear the word church, to think of a building. And the plain and simple fact is that the church, the word church, always, always, always refers to people gathered by Jesus. Always. It's a gathering of men and women, not just any gathering. It's a gathering of men and women who have been brought together because Jesus chose to gather them together. Now, this should raise in your mind why. What does Jesus mean to do with these people he gathers? All of these are very important questions. We'll get to them, some of them today and some of them later in this series. But the thing that I want to be impressed deep into your mind is that the first misunderstanding that comes from identifying church as a building is that it fools you into thinking the church is not what it is, which is people. It's people. Okay? The church is a gathering of people. What happens when we forget this? Well, for one, stuff and things matter more than people. Have you ever experienced a community called a church where it seems that more important than the people that are gathered there are the building that they meet in and the details about the building, the color of the carpet, whether a painting would be hung here or there, how tall the steeple should be, what the roof should be made out of? Are you following me? Now, this is very easy for me to say from my position since we don't have a building and I can criticize another church at a distance. But let me tell you that I stress this to you this morning because even though we don't have a building, we also are always in danger of forgetting that the church is not a place, but it's people that are gathered by Jesus. May I confess to you that I myself have made this mistake of mistaking this community, which is a group of people gathered by Jesus. I've made the mistake of forgetting that this is the main thing and not the place where we meet. Some of you were here a few years ago when we used to meet in a church nearby. The Sunday that I discovered we were going to be asked to find another place to meet, I wish that I was confident and secure because of my faith, but I admit that I was afraid, anxious, deeply unnerved by the news that we had to meet somewhere else. What happened very quickly for the next 2 weeks is that all of the space in my mind that ought to have been set aside for thinking about the people that God had gathered together in this community, in Orb, that all got crowded out with anxiety about where we were going to have church. I have a small group. At the time, I had a small group of college students or high school students that just graduated, three of them. And these guys were in various places. One was a strong Christian. One wasn't sure. The third was a druggie. It was a great group. We gathered weekly to talk about prayer and to pray together. We were meeting at Riverside Gardens. You know, this park right over here. We were sitting on the steps, and I decided to begin by being vulnerable. I told them how anxious I was about finding a new place for Orb to meet. I told about my frustrations, about how nervous I was for our church, where would we go, what would we do. The fellow who was known to smoke a little of this and that, he listened quietly. He didn't seem unnerved. You know, he was probably really calm. But then, when I finished with my anxiety about church and where will we go, do you know, he looked at me and he said this. And this is what he said. I couldn't believe it. Christian, Orb's not a building. The church isn't a place. This right here. Guys like us gathering together to pray, this is the church. He was totally right. He reminded me of what I ought to have known. And he said what all of us are going to be tempted to forget now and then, especially as we face challenges of where to meet. If we do someday find a building that we can gather in, oh, we will have to be on our most attentive lookout against this misunderstanding of the community of people gathered by Jesus with a building. Because when we forget that the church, first of all, is people gathered, we not only make the mistake of paying more attention to buildings and stuff than people, but there are other things that follow as well. There's a second major misunderstanding. And I said I'll give you three. There are many more than three. Maybe you can think of them yourselves and have conversations after I'm done talking today with the rest of your day. But here's a second major misunderstanding, and it has to do with church growth. Have you heard that phrase, church growth? You know that a healthy church is meant to be a church that's growing. Many of us would aspire to that, to see a church that grows. It's a good thing. The church is always depicted in the New Testament as something that grows. But think of this. When the church is mistaken for a building, what does church growth become? It's quite simple, right? It becomes a bigger building with more people in it. And that desire can creep into the people who are there, especially the leadership, in such a way that what they begin to concern themselves with all the time is how to make the building bigger and to get more people in there. I was introduced some time back in a social setting to a fellow who was introduced to me as a church planter. He had just started a church, and then the person who introduced me to him said, "Oh, Christian's a pastor too. You ought to meet." I said to the man, "Nice to meet you." And then he nodded and he smiled. He didn't say anything, but he kind of raised his eyebrows and shook his head like this. I took that to mean, ask me how I'm doing. Have you ever had that experience? Please ask me how it's going, he wanted to say. So I said, how's it going for you? And he said, we started 5 weeks ago. We had 15. This Sunday, 200. I knew without saying that the numbers referred to people. But that was unsettling to me, that he had reduced the people to numbers. Are you with me? That seemed a little unnerving. I wanted to make some kind of joke about like what he had 15 of and now what he has 200 of. I don't know, ulcers? You had 15 ulcers when you started, now you have 200? I couldn't think of anything. I felt aghast, but again, let me be honest. I could see so quickly that reduction in his language because I myself and others of us who are in positions of leadership, we want more people to come. It's a sign of health, perhaps. And that reduction of growth to numerical things, to numbers, is alive in me and in many of us. But it absolutely betrays the fact, again, that the church is not a building, but it's people. And the kind of growth that the New Testament pictures, whenever it talks about ecclesia, whenever it talks about the people that are gathered together, it's not numerical growth, first of all. Of course, there are one or two times in Acts where there's a quick, rapid growth of the church. People who are out to make bigger churches always refer only to those texts. But more prevalent by far in the New Testament is the idea that the growth that happens for those gathered is not quantitative, but it's qualitative. That is, Jesus gathers people together, and when he gathers them, what he does is he builds them up. Not builds a bigger building, not necessarily gets lots more people, but the ones who are there, who do come together, are meant to be built up. You and I, first of all, together as Jesus gathers us, are meant to be built up by him. It's quite intriguing, by the way. In the New Testament, there are images of a building used for the church, but it's a spiritual building. Some of you might know in 1 Peter, there the apostle tells those who are gathered, let yourselves be built into a spiritual house. God means to gather us so that you and I, all of us, are built up ourselves. First of all, in our relationships to Jesus Christ. And this is a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful and a fantastic fact that we should never lose. And if we miss what the church is, we'll lose this. But that the church is the group of people who are gathered and built up in relation to Jesus. Let me tell you what that means. It means that as you participate in this community, you grow in your love for Jesus. That as you are more and more involved in this place and you learn and you come to understand God and Jesus better, you learn to trust him more. Growing in Jesus, being built up in him, means your anxiety about all of the things in life that cause people to worry, that diminishes. Your concern for what other people think of you, your insecurities, those begin to go away as your security in Jesus Christ grows and becomes greater and greater. You become a person who bears the fruit that the Spirit of Jesus, who calls us together and gathers us and builds us, you become a person in whom those fruit grow. Let me tell you what they are. Love. You become more able to love the people around you. Joy. You're not a person who's always sad and drawn down by your circumstances. Even as they're there, joy is growing in you. Peace. Patience. When things aren't going quite right, instead of becoming really crazy and haywire, you become calm and at ease because Jesus is growing you. You become a person who's gentle and generous. You're kind. You're a person who has self-control and you're faithful. These are the kinds of growth that the New Testament pictures. If you want to refer back to that list, it's in Galatians 5, the fruit of the Spirit. The church is not a building, it's people gathered together by Jesus. He gathers those people together, not just so more and more and more people come and the building gets bigger, but so those who are gathered grow in relation to him. That will hopefully mean that more people come, but that's only healthy and good if that growth is a matter of internal growth rather than just external, more and more numbers. It's only good when those people who are gathered by him are also built up by Jesus, and that's what he means to do. Now, I want to highlight one other misunderstanding that comes from identifying the church with a building. And I put this one last because I think it's the easiest one to infect those who do understand that they're gathered by Jesus and who are being built up by him. And it's the one that will most undermine the effectiveness of the church in the world. And it's this misunderstanding. When the church is identified with a building, it's very easy for all of those who come together in it to begin to act as if the church is for them and them only. To begin to behave as if this building exists for them and their needs, and that's it. Now, let me tell you all that in one sense, it is true that this community does exist for you. It is here for the purposes of building you up, for giving you what you need as you come to know Jesus Christ. It is a community that exists to give you an awareness of the good news of God's love and grace and mercy in Jesus Christ. It is a community that is meant to open your eyes to the truth about you because of his love for you. It is a community that is meant to strengthen you in many and various ways. But if it ever becomes a community that is understood just as if it's for you only, then it ceases to be the church. Do you know how common this misunderstanding is of the church? Let me share another story. This happened around the same time as that Jets game. I was just beginning in those years, and for those of you who don't know the history of this church, how this came about, let me just say briefly, it started as an outreach ministry with high school students, and it sort of grew over the years into a church. In about the third or fourth year, I overheard some high school kids calling the group their church. And before that, I wasn't comfortable calling it a church because I was very much caught in this understanding of church's building. At that time, I was friends with a young man named Andrew, and he was an employee of a parachurch group called Young Life. Have you ever heard of Young Life? It's a great ministry. Parachurch means alongside the church, and their mission was to do outreach with high school students who didn't go to churches. Now, it just so happened that that was exactly our calling when Orb started. Remember those days. We were a community called to reach out to high school students. It was uncanny how similar our callings were. And so I became friends with him, and we used to meet right up the street here at a small coffee shop, a mom-and-pop place called Starbones, and we would drink coffee together and talk about ministry. He was having a hard time raising support, and it stressed him. And we would share about how ministry was going. One afternoon, as we sat down together, I told him that for the first time, Orb was going to be called a church. I shared with him that some of the young people in our group had begun to call it a church with the friends that they were inviting, and I thought this was wonderful. And I shared it with him, and I said, gosh, this is a new thing for us. We're a church. Now, when I said those words, his eyes sort of glazed over, and he really got quiet for the rest of our time. I said goodbye. Within an hour, he called me and he said, Christian, I want to meet with you. There's something that I need to talk with you about. It was a few days went by. We got together in that same spot. He told me that he had a conversation with some of his supporters about what I had shared with him. And here's what he said. Stringfellow. Got me? All right. She called him. The pastor called William Stringfellow because he thought he's a lawyer. Maybe he can trick the landlord into not having to get money. Lawyers can do that, can't they? So he calls William Stringfellow and he says, I need help. This woman wants money. We don't have any, but we need to help her, I think. Can you make it so the landlord doesn't need money? William Stringfellow was on his way to the airport at the time, and he was annoyed because he thought in his mind, the pastor should know the answer to this question without having to ask me. He didn't have time to do small talk because he was late for an airplane, but he was angry because he thought the church, he knew this, by the way, William Stringfellow knew, the church is not a building. It's not a gathering that is always growing for its own sake, and it's sent like Jesus was sent. And do you know that when Jesus was sent into the world, he didn't hold on to his things? It says in Philippians that Jesus emptied himself of everything. William Stringfellow, this lawyer in the church, and you lawyers in here, you could think like this too. He thought right away, the church should not hold on to its own stuff. If someone needs money and the church can help out, it should let go of what it has. That's what a community that's sent by Jesus would be like. Here's what William Stringfellow said to him. He's sent by Jesus. And if it's not all three, it's not a church. That means if it's a people gathered and built up by Jesus, but they're not sent, it's not yet the ecclesia, the people who are called out, the people who are summoned forth. Because the way Jesus operates with his disciples and the way he operates with communities now is that he gathers them so he can build them up, and he builds them up so he can send them. This is quite plain. At the end of the Gospel of John, Jesus tells his disciples he's gathered. He says to them, as the Father sent me, so also I send you. I think it would be inconceivable in Jesus' mind that a group could be called a church that gathered and then was built up only for its own sake. That a group could be gathered and built up, and if it wanted to reach out to other people, it would have to farm that work out to another organization. That it would have to hire some professionals to do outreach because now it was a church. No, the church is a group of people gathered, built up, and sent by Jesus. That means that you and I, if we are to understand what Outreach Red Bank Community Church is, and I think we ought to, if we are to have the right understanding about what this church is, it should be an understanding that means we first of all see ourselves as people called by Jesus together. And I'll tell you, when I look at each and every one of you, even those of you who aren't sure what you believe, even those of you who have been brought by a friend or a family member and you don't think of yourselves as a Christian, I believe first that all of you have been gathered not by your friends or family or even by yourself, but you've been gathered by Jesus. And I think it would be best for you also to be open to that understanding about yourself. That when you think of yourself as a part of this ecclesia, when you think of yourself as a part of this church, you should first of all think, Jesus has brought me here. And then you should ask why. And there's always a reason why. First, the reason is that he wants to build you up. And he does. He means to build up every one of you. He wants you to be more of the person he meant you to be. But he doesn't just build you up for nothing. He builds you up to send you as he builds this whole community up to send us into the world. Now, I'm getting ahead of myself. It's hard for me not now to talk about member, and that's what we're going to talk about next week. It's hard for me not to talk about the word mission. Because the church, in a sense, is a community that is in mission. It's hard for me not to talk about witness. The church as a whole is a body that's being strengthened to be a witness. I'll get to that in the coming weeks. But for now, all of us must have this sense of what church is. And I'm going to go ahead and put it over there. The church is people gathered, built up, and sent by Jesus. What does it look like to be a community sent by Jesus? Now, I want to close with one picture of what it looks like. This is not the only picture. The truth is, the way it will look for any of us to be sent by Jesus depends on who we are, what our life is like right now, who are our neighbors and our family and our friends, the sorts of time we have, what kind of activities we're involved in. There was a church in the 60s in New York City. In that church, there was a lawyer. We have some lawyers in here, don't we? Some lawyer birds who come to church here? Yes? Any lawyers? Don't be shy. Yes. A few others. There's some doctors here. There's some students here, some moms and dads, some business folks, some financial hotshots, etc. All of you are sent. This lawyer at this church in New York City, he practiced law and he also wrote books. The church that he went to received a phone call one afternoon from a woman who lived on the same block as the church building. She didn't go to that congregation, but she knew there was a church there, and she called the offices of that church because she was having a hard time financially. She was going to be evicted because she couldn't come up with any money for rent. And so she was desperate, and she thought, I think churches are supposed to care about people's needs. And so she made a phone call over to that church. The pastor answered the phone. She said to him, Pastor, I need money. I'm going to be evicted. I live right around the corner from the building where you meet. Can you help me? The church was having a hard time financially at that time. You know, sometimes churches don't have enough money for what they're trying to do. He said, I don't know what I'll do. Let me call you back. He hung up and he called this fellow, William Stringfellow. Stringfellow was his last name, not William Stringfellow, but William Stringfellow. Got me? All right. She called him. The pastor called William Stringfellow because he thought he's a lawyer. Maybe he can trick the landlord into not having to get money. Lawyers can do that, can't they? So he calls William Stringfellow and he says, I need help. This woman wants money. We don't have any, but we need to help her, I think. Can you make it so the landlord doesn't need money? William Stringfellow was on his way to the airport at the time, and he was annoyed because he thought in his mind, the pastor should know the answer to this question without having to ask me. He didn't have time to do small talk because he was late for an airplane, but he was angry. Because he thought the church, he knew this, by the way, William Stringfellow knew, the church is not a building. It's not a gathering that is always growing for its own sake. And it's sent like Jesus was sent. And do you know that when Jesus was sent into the world, he didn't hold on to his things? It says in Philippians that Jesus emptied himself of everything. William Stringfellow, this lawyer in the church, and you lawyers in here, you could think like this too. He thought right away, the church should not hold on to its own stuff. If someone needs money and the church can help out, it should let go of what it has. That's what a community that's sent by Jesus would be like. Here's what William Stringfellow said to him. He said, "Pastor, do you know those fine tapestries that hang in our fellowship hall?" It just so happened, by the way, that this was an historic church, and it had very old tapestries that were worth a lot of money in its fellowship hall. Every year, the church had to hire someone to clean them, and then also they had to pay for insurance for these things, because each one of them was worth many thousands of dollars. They were a source of great pride and loved by many of the people in that community. Called the church. They loved their tapestries. And this is what William Stringfellow said. He said, "Don't you know what to do? The guy who cleans our tapestries has offered to buy them from us many times. Sell the tapestries, give the money to the landlord, problem solved." And he didn't wait for a reply. He just hung the phone up. And he doesn't say in his story what happened. The church, which is a community gathered and built up and sent by Jesus, just as Jesus was sent by, it cannot be a community that wouldn't sell its tapestries. It can't be. If it holds on to them, it's not being the church. Now, again, I chose an example that saves us because we don't have fine tapestries. The rug I stand on here was probably found in a garbage pile. But the question for us as a community will be very simply this as we progress. Are we ready to be sent as Jesus was sent? Sent as people who are ready to let go of the things that we have and hold on to. Individually, some of us have tapestries in our house, perhaps, or fine things that we actually don't need. The question will be for us as a whole, will we be a community that is willing to let go of the fine things that we have if in so doing we are able to go into this world, not for ourselves, but into the world as Jesus was sent, into the world as members of his body. That's what we're going to talk about next week. Into the world as people who are on the mission, 2 weeks from now, that Jesus gives the community that is his body and made up of his members, willing to go into the world so that we look witnesses, so that we look like what Jesus looked like, willing to let go of all the things that we have to be obedient to him in a way that's good for the world that he loved and died for. I want to close simply by asking you to come back again, to come back and consider with me the reclamation of these other words as we gather to learn more clearly who we are here as a church in Red Bank, a church that God is gathering and building up and sending for his purposes. I want to pray now as the musicians come forward, as we continue to worship in song, and I want to ask you to join me in prayer now. God, I thank you that we can gather together as a people and consider again what it is to be a church. I know that as I've shared today, there are many questions that have come up that have not been answered. I do pray, however, that you'd seal it in our minds, each one of us, the things that we have discovered again, afresh, remembering that the church is not a building but people, remembering that it's a group of people that are gathered to grow in their quality of relationship to you, growing as they know you better and become more and more like you. And I pray also that we would remember that we're meant to be sent as a community, sent in the way that you sent your son Jesus. Teach us in the rest of our time together this morning and as we continue to meet to know what it means to be your community gathered for your purposes. And I pray this in the name of your son Jesus Christ, who gathers us and builds us up. In his name we pray. Amen.